Okay. Thank you, Kelly. It's a pleasure to be here today. My name is Jamie Thomas, and I'm real excited to actually give the first public presentation on a molecule that we're really excited about at Dow AgroSciences, and that is sulfoxaflor. Just to give you a little background, sulfoxaflor is a member of a new chemical class of insecticides called the sulfoxamines, which was discovered, developed by, and is proprietary to Dow AgroSciences. It is targeted for global development in all major crop groups, but certainly cotton is a key component of that, and was first field tested in 2006, and development has proceeded at a very rapid pace since then. I'm going to try to give you a really broad overview today, not go into a whole lot of depth on sulfoxaflor, but there will be several papers following this that will give a lot of detailed efficacy information on cotton. Real quickly, if you're interested in chemical structures, there it is. It has been published in the patent literature and international standards literature. For the purposes of time, I won't say a whole lot more about it, except that you can find it out there if you're more interested. Some of the attributes of sulfoxaflor are that it is a broad-spectrum sap-feeding insecticide particularly active on aphids, plant bugs, white flies, plant hoppers, scales, and some other sap feeders. It does not have any appreciable activity on chewing insects such as caterpillars or beetles. It is effective at low use rates. It's fast acting, and in particular has shown very good extended residual control in field trials. And we think it'll be a valuable rotational partner with other chemistries. The spectrum and the properties suggest it'll have an excellent fit in IPM. It does, for example, appear to be relatively soft on beneficials, and it has been shown to be very effective on insect populations resistant to a variety of other insecticides, pretty much everything on the market currently. Just a little bit about lab activity. For example, the contact activity, particularly against aphids, appears to be very good. And let's see, Kelly, do I have it here? Okay. Well, this one? Okay. Ah, there we go. Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. But if we look at LC50s and LC90s, so smaller bars indicating greater activity, we see in this kind of assay where you expose the aphids for a brief period on residues on glass vials, and then remove them, put them on untreated plants, we see about twofold more activity than imidacloprid and about eightfold more activity than acetamiprid in this assay. Just a little bit about adjuvants. Overall, adjuvants do not appear to be critical for the activity of sulfoxaflor. We do see in some lab assays, with white flies in particular, that they seem to enhance some efficacy, and that's across really all of the major types of adjuvants, crop oils, non-ionics, and organosilicones. Just in the interest of time, I won't say a whole lot more about it, except that the lab data do show sharper control with adjuvants in some cases. Again, though, no adjuvant or no indication that adjuvants are required for control. We do see more effects in the lab than in the field, and we think that probably improved coverage is likely the reason for better activity. And no indication of any negative effects by adjuvants. In terms of formulations, the molecule is very flexible. We are targeting a 50% water dispersible granule for U.S. cotton, and the use rates on a per application basis are expected to be about 0.75 ounces for aphids to 1.5 ounces of formulated product per acre. And that's what we would term an X rate. We do anticipate that there'll be room on the label for higher rates as well. And that translates to about 0.022 to 0.045 pounds active ingredient per acre, or 25 to 50 grams per hectare if you prefer a metric. I'm going to go through just a little bit of field control, some summaries from actually outside the U.S. As I said, there'll be a lot of detail on U.S. efficacy data following this. But this is a summary of 10 trials for cotton aphid control in Brazil over several years. And looking at that 0.022 pounds per acre rate that looks like the X rate for aphids. And you can see across the course of the trial, sulfoxaflor in blue here out to about 10 days, generally the best treatment in this summary, very similar to acetamiprid at 0.027 pounds but some indication of that improved residual control when we get out to 10 days. Ligase activity is something we're real excited about. This does appear to be a very good ligase compound. We have looked at ligase control in a number of countries, and here's an example of some data from China. And looking at percent control actually with both the 0.022 and 0.045 pounds per acre rates, and we see generally they are the best treatments throughout this trial relative to other standards, particularly that 0.045 pound rate. Jacids actually are a type of leafhopper that can be a very important cotton pest in some Asian and Middle Eastern countries. Sulfoxaflor has shown very good activity on jacids as well. A little bit different rate structure here, looking at the low rate and a 0.032 pounds per acre rate, and it looks like that 0.032 pounds per acre rate is the X rate for jacids, and shows very good residual control as well. Just a little bit about beneficials. These data actually are from the U.S., and they're a summary of trials on alfalfa. Alfalfa is just a very good research crop for this type of work. There's a great diversity of beneficial insects out there. You see in this case there was a complex of a variety of predators as well as braconid wasps. And we look at essentially that X rate for ligase as well as a twofold rate. And it appears that sulfoxaflor is pretty soft on these beneficials relative to some other types of chemistry. Mode of action. We do know that sulfoxaflor interacts with the insect nicotinic receptor. However, as I've said, it is in a novel chemical class with structural differences compared to existing insecticides. And in particular, we've observed a broad lack of cross resistance in aphid, whitefly, and hopper populations compared to neonicotinoids. We also know that the sulfoxamines as a whole exhibit some structure activity and spectrum differences compared to neonicotinoids. And again, that beetle activity, for example, is not really there with the sulfoxamines. We do have more work to do there, and studies defining the precise nature of the sulfoxaflor interaction with the nicotinic receptor are continuing. A little bit of the data relative to cross resistance. We've done a lot of our work with Rothamsted Experiment Station in the UK. This is an aphid strain with significant resistance to deltamethrin and pyrimicarb, more moderate level of resistance to imidacloprid, and no cross resistance to sulfoxaflor. Whiteflies as a whole, especially Bemisia tabaci, are a group of insects that have probably exhibited the most severe resistance issues with neonicotinoids and certainly a variety of other insecticides as well. This is a Q-type Bemisia tabaci strain resistant to multiple neonicotinoids. You see very high level of resistance to imidacloprid and thiamethoxam, a more moderate level of resistance to acetamiprid and dinotefuran, and no significant resistance to sulfoxaflor. Another whitefly strain that we maintain in our labs in Indianapolis, a Bemisia strain, very highly resistant to imidacloprid, close to 900-fold, and nothing outside of what we'd expect with interstrain variation with sulfoxaflor. Now, one of the reasons we feel like this lack of cross resistance is observed actually is for metabolic differences. We believe, for example, that imidacloprid is primarily metabolized by monooxygenases. And there are carbon atoms adjacent to some of these amine atoms or amine nitrogen atoms that are very susceptible to alpha amino monooxygenases that produce various metabolites that detoxify the molecule. All neonicotinoids have at least one of these amine nitrogen atoms that would be susceptible to a similar type of metabolism. Whereas sulfoxaflor, as I've already indicated, is structurally distinct. It does not have that nitrogen functional group that would make it susceptible to the same group of monooxygenases. In terms of acute toxicity, the mammalian toxicity is relatively low. We see a rat oral LD50 of about 1,000 milligrams per kilogram. dermal LD50 greater than 5,000, essentially no inhalation toxicity, and no evidence of skin sensitization or irritation. And the non-target toxicity appears to be pretty good as well. We see with fish in particular, very little toxicity. With birds, bobwhite quail, and mallard ducks, very high LC50s indicating little toxicity. It's not toxic in any appreciable manner to Daphnia magna, which is a very sensitive organism. We do see a little bit of an effect on chironomid midges. And honeybees, of course, have gotten a lot of attention lately, and the honeybee toxicity relative to other compounds appears to be pretty good. About a five-fold higher LD50 compared to imidacloprid, for example, and about 20-fold higher compared to bifenthrin. Bottom line is it does look like it has relatively low toxicity to non-target organisms. The regulatory timeline, all regulatory studies are proceeding as expected. We do anticipate a U.S. regulatory decision either late fourth quarter 2011 or first quarter of 2012, with the U.S. launch anticipated in 2012. And at that point, we expect crops to include cotton, most vegetables, tree fruits and nuts, small grains, and soybeans in the U.S. And finally, just some acknowledgments. I certainly would like to thank Rothamsted Experiment Station, in particular Ian Denholm and Kevin Gorham for contributions, as well as a number of folks around the world with Dowager Sciences who contributed efficacy data. We have time for questions? Okay. Peter. It is the parent compound. We see very little metabolism in insects so far. We haven't really been able to show any appreciable metabolism in insects. Is that it? Okay. Thank you.